No, and if I did, what would I accomplish by travelling with you? If I were trying to capture or kill you, I would have let you in prison. Murtagh stumbled as he jumped over a fallen log. You could be leading the Urgles to the Varden. Then, said Murtagh shortly, why am I still with you? I know where the Varden are now. What reason could I have for delivering myself to them? If I were going to attack them, I'd turn around and join the Urgles. Maybe you're an assassin, stated Aragorn flatly. Maybe. You can't really know, can you?
Saphira? Aragorn asked simply.
Her tail swished over his head.
If he wanted to harm you, he could have done it long ago.
A branch whipped Aragorn's neck, causing a line of blood to appear on his skin. The waterfall was growing louder.
I want you to watch Murtagh closely when we get to the Varden. He may do something foolish, and I don't want him killed by accident.
I'll do my best, she said as she shouldered her way between two trees, scraping off slabs of bark.
The horn sounded behind them again. Aragorn glanced over his shoulder, expecting Urgles to rush out of the darkness. The waterfall throbbed dully ahead of them, drowning out the sounds of the night. The forest ended, and Murtagh pulled the horses to a stop. They were on a pebble beach directly to the left of the mouth of the Beartooth River. The deep lake Costamirna filled the valley, blocking their way. The water gleamed with flickering starlight. The mountain walls restricted passage around Costamirna to a thin strip of shore on either side of the lake, both no more than a few steps wide. At the lake's far end, a broad sheet of water tumbled down a black cliff into boiling mounds of froth.
"Do we go to the falls?" asked Murtagh tightly.
"Yes." Aragorn took the lead and picked his way along the lake's left side. The pebbles underfoot were damp and slime-covered. There was barely enough room for Saphira between the sheer valley wall and the lake. She had to walk with 2 feet in the water. They were halfway to the waterfall when Murtagh warned,
"Urgles!"
Aragorn whirled around, rocks spraying from under his heel. By the shore of Costamirna, where they had been only minutes before, hulking figures streamed out of the forest. The Urgles massed before the lake. One of them gestured at Saphira. Guttural words drifted over the water. Immediately the horde split and started around both sides of the lake, leaving Aragorn and Murtagh without an escape route. The narrow shore forced the bulky cull to march single file.
"Run!"
barked Murtagh, drawing his sword and slapping the horses on their flanks. Saphira took off without warning and wheeled back toward the Urgles.
"No!"
cried Aragorn, shouting with his mind.
"Come back!"
But she continued, heedless to his pleas. With an agonizing effort, he tore his gaze from her and plunged forward, wrenching Zarok from its sheath. Saphira dived at the Urgles, bellowing fiercely. They tried to scatter but were trapped against the mountainside. She caught a cull between her talons and carried the screaming creature aloft, tearing at him with her fangs. The silent body crashed into the lake a moment later, an arm and a leg missing. The cull continued around Costamirna undeterred. With smoke streaming from her nostrils, Saphira dived at them again. She twisted and rolled as a cloud of black arrows shot toward her. Most of the darts glanced off her scaled sides, leaving no more than bruises, but she roared as the rest pierced her wings. Aragorn's arms twinged with sympathetic pain, and he had to restrain himself from rushing to her defense. Fear flooded his veins as he saw the line of Urgles closing in on them. He tried to run faster, but his muscles were too tired, the rocks too slippery. Then, with a loud splash, Saphira plunged into Costamirna. She submerged completely, sending ripples across the lake. The Urgles nervously eyed the dark water lapping at their feet. One growled something indecipherable and jabbed his spear at the lake. The water exploded as Saphira's head shot out of the depths. Her jaws closed on the spear, breaking it like a twig as she tore it out of the cull's hands with a vicious twist. Before she could seize the Urgle himself, his companions thrust at her with their spears, bloodying her nose. Saphira jerked back and hissed angrily, beating the water with her tail. Keeping his spear pointed at her, the lead cull tried to edge past, but halted when she snapped at his legs. The string of Urgles was forced to stop as she held him at bay. Meanwhile, the cull on the other side of the lake still hurried toward the falls.
"I've trapped them," she told Aragorn tersely. "But hurry, I cannot hold them long."
Archers on the shore were already taking aim at her. Aragorn concentrated on going faster, but a rock gave under his boot and he pitched forward. Murtagh's strong arm kept him on his feet, and clasping each other's forearms, they urged the horses forward with shouts.
They were almost to the waterfall. The noise was overwhelming, like an avalanche. A white wall of water gushed down the cliff, pounding the rocks below with a fury that sent mist spraying through the air to run down their faces. 4 yards from the thunderous curtain, the beach widened, giving them room to maneuver. Saphira roared as an Urgal's spear grazed her haunch, then retreated underwater. With her withdrawal, the Cull rushed forward with long strides. They were only a few hundred feet away. "What do we do now?" Murtagh demanded coldly. "I don't know. Let me think," cried Aragorn, searching Arya's memories for her final instructions. He scanned the ground until he found a rock the size of an apple, grabbed it, then pounded on the cliff next to the fall, shouting, "Ey varden, aber du shortagulls, gata vanta!" Nothing happened. He tried again, shouting louder than before, but only succeeded in bruising his hand. He turned in despair to Murtagh. "We're trapped!" His words were cut off as Saphira leapt out of the lake, dousing them with icy water. She landed on the beach and crouched, ready to fight. The horses backpedaled wildly, trying to bolt. Aragorn reached out with his mind to steady them.
"Behind you!"
cried Saphira. He turned and glimpsed the lead Urgal running at him, heavy spear raised. Up close, a Cull was as tall as a small giant, with legs and arms as thick as tree trunks. Murtagh drew back his arm and threw his sword with incredible speed. The long weapon revolved once, then struck the Cull point first in the chest with a dull crunch. The huge Urgal toppled to the ground with a strangled gurgle. Before another Cull could attack, Murtagh dashed forward and yanked his sword out of the body. Aragorn raised his palm, shouting, "Girda thera Calphis!" Sharp cracks resounded off the cliff. 20 of the charging Urgals fell into Costa Myrna, howling and clutching their legs where shards of bone protruded. Without breaking stride, the rest of the Urgals advanced over their fallen companions. Aragorn struggled against his weariness, putting a hand on Saphira for support. A flight of arrows, impossible to see in the darkness, brushed past them and clattered against the cliff. Aragorn and Murtagh ducked, covering their heads. With a small growl, Saphira jumped over them so that her armored side shielded them and the horses. A chorus of clinks sounded as a second volley of arrows bounced off her scales. "What now?" shouted Murtagh. There was still no opening in the cliff. "We can't stay here!" Aragorn heard Saphira snarl as an arrow caught the edge of her wing, tearing the thin membrane. He looked around wildly, trying to understand why Arya's instructions had not worked. "I don't know! This is where we're supposed to be!" "Why don't you ask the elf to make sure?" demanded Murtagh. He dropped his sword, snatched his bow from Tornak's saddlebags, and with a swift motion loosed an arrow from between the spikes on Saphira's back. A moment later, an Urgal toppled into the water. "Now? She's barely alive! How's she going to find the energy to say anything?" "I don't know," shouted Murtagh. "But you'd better think of something, because we can't stave off an entire army."
"Aragorn!"
growled Saphira urgently.
"What?" "We're on the wrong side of the lake. I've seen Arya's memories through you, and I just realized that this isn't the right place."
She tucked her head against her breast as another flight of arrows sped toward them. Her tail flicked in pain as they struck her.
"I can't keep this up. They're tearing me to pieces."
Aragorn slammed Zarok back into its sheath and exclaimed, "The Varden are on the other side of the lake. We have to go through the waterfall." He noted with dread that the Urgals across Costa Myrna were almost to the falls. Murtagh's eyes shot toward the violent deluge blocking their way. "We'll never get the horses through there, even if we can hold our own footing." "I'll convince them to follow us," snapped Aragorn, "and Saphira can carry Arya." The Urgal's cries and bellows made Snowfire snort angrily. The elf lolled on his back, oblivious to the danger. Murtagh shrugged. "It's better than being hacked to death." He swiftly cut Arya loose from Snowfire's saddle, and Aragorn caught the elf as she slid to the ground.
"I'm ready,"
said Saphira, rising into a half-crouch. The approaching Urgals hesitated, unsure of her intentions.
"Now!"
cried Aragorn. He and Murtagh heaved Arya onto Saphira, then secured her legs in the saddle straps. The second they were finished, Saphira swept up her wings and soared over the lake. The Urgals behind her howled as they saw her escaping. Arrows clattered off her belly. The Cull on the other shore redoubled their pace so as to attain the waterfall before she landed. Aragorn reached out with his mind to force himself into the frightened thoughts of the horses. Using the ancient language, he told them that unless they swam through the waterfall, they would be killed and eaten by the Urgals. Though they did not understand everything he said, the meaning of his words was unmistakable. Snowfire and Tornak tossed their heads, then dashed into the thundering downpour, whinnying as it struck their backs. They floundered, struggling to stay above water. Murtagh sheathed his sword and jumped after them. His head disappeared under a froth of bubbles before he bobbed up, sputtering. The Urgles were right behind Aragorn. He could hear their feet crunching on the gravel. With a fierce war cry, he leapt after Murtagh, closing his eyes a second before the cold water pummeled him. The tremendous weight of the waterfall slammed down on his shoulders with back-breaking force. The water's mindless roar filled his ears. He was driven to the bottom, where his knees gouged the rocky lakebed. He kicked off with all his strength and shot partway out of the water. Before he could take a gulp of air, the cascade rammed him back underwater. All he could see was a white blur as foam billowed around him. He frantically tried to surface and relieve his burning lungs, but he only rose a few feet before the deluge halted his ascent. He panicked, thrashing his arms and legs, fighting the water. Weighted down by Zarok and his drenched clothes, he sank back to the lakebed, unable to speak the ancient words that could save him. Suddenly, a strong hand grasped the back of his tunic and dragged him through the water. His rescuer sliced through the lake with quick, short strokes. Aragorn hoped it was Murtagh, not an Urgle. They surfaced and stumbled onto the pebble beach. Aragorn was trembling violently. His entire body shivered in bursts. Sounds of combat erupted to his right, and he whirled toward them, expecting an Urgle attack. The monsters on the opposite shore, where he had stood only moments before, fell beneath a withering hail of arrows from crevasses that pockmarked the cliff. Scores of Urgles already floated belly up in the water, riddled with shafts. The ones on Aragorn's shore were similarly engaged. Neither group could retreat from their exposed positions, for rows of warriors had somehow appeared behind them, where the lake met the mountainsides. All that prevented the nearest cull from rushing Aragorn was the steady rain of arrows. The unseen archers seemed determined to keep the Urgles at bay. A gruff voice next to Aragorn said,
"Akunteras, Dorjeda! What were they thinking? You would have drowned!"
Aragorn jerked with surprise. It was not Murtagh standing by him, but a diminutive man no taller than his elbow. The dwarf was busy wringing water out of his long, braided beard. His chest was stocky, and he wore a chainmail jacket cut off at the shoulders to reveal muscular arms. A war axe hung from a wide leather belt strapped around his waist. An iron-bound oxhide cap bearing the symbol of a hammer surrounded by 12 stars sat firmly on his head. Even with the cap, he barely topped 4 feet. He looked longingly at the fighting and said,
"Bazul, but I wish I could join them."
A dwarf? Aragorn drew Zarok and looked for Saphira and Murtagh. 2 12-foot-thick stone doors had opened in the cliff, revealing a broad tunnel nearly 30 feet tall that burrowed its way into the mysterious depths of the mountain. A line of flameless lamps filled the passageway with a pale sapphire light that spilled out onto the lake. Saphira and Murtagh stood before the tunnel, surrounded by a grim mixture of men and dwarves. At Murtagh's elbow was a bald, beardless man dressed in purple and gold robes. He was taller than all the other humans, and he was holding a dagger to Murtagh's throat. Aragorn reached for his power, but the robed man said in a sharp, dangerous voice,
"Stop! If you use magic, I'll kill your lovely friend here, who was so kind as to mention you're a rider. Don't think I won't know if you're drawing upon it. You can't hide anything from me."
Aragorn tried to speak, but the man snarled and pressed the dagger harder against Murtagh's throat.
"None of that! If you say or do anything I don't tell you to, he will die. Now everyone inside!"
He backed into the tunnel, pulling Murtagh with him and keeping his eyes on Aragorn.
"Saphira, what should I do?"
Aragorn asked quickly as the men and dwarves followed Murtagh's captor, leading the horses along with them.
"Go with them," she counseled, "and hope that we live."
She entered the tunnel herself, eliciting nervous glances from those around her. Reluctantly, Aragorn followed her, aware that the warrior's eyes were upon him. His rescuer, the dwarf, walked alongside him with a hand on the haft of his war axe. Utterly exhausted, Aragorn staggered into the mountain. The stone doors swung shut behind them with only a whisper of sound. He looked back and saw a seamless wall where the opening had been. They were trapped inside. But were they any safer?
Hunting for answers.
"This way!"
snapped the bald man. He stepped back, keeping the dagger pressed under Murtagh's chin, then wheeled to the right, disappearing through an arched doorway. The warriors cautiously followed him, their attention centered on Aragorn and Saphira. The horses were led into a different tunnel. Dazed by the turn of events, Aragorn started after Murtagh. He glanced at Saphira to confirm that Arya was still tied to her back. "She has to get the antidote," he thought frantically, knowing that even then the Skilna Brach was fulfilling its deadly purpose within her flesh. He hurried through the arched doorway and down a narrow corridor after the bald man. The warriors kept their weapons pointed at him. They swept past the sculpture of a peculiar animal with thick quills. The corridor curved sharply to the left, then to the right. A door opened and they entered a bare room large enough for Saphira to move around with ease. There was a hollow boom as the door closed, followed by a loud scrape as a bolt was secured on the outside. Aragorn slowly examined his surroundings, Zarok tight in his hand. The walls, floor and ceiling were made of polished white marble that reflected a ghost image of everyone like a mirror of veined milk. One of the unusual lanterns hung in each corner. "There's an injured," he began, but a sharp gesture from the bald man cut him off.
"Do not speak. It must wait until you have been tested."
He shoved Murtagh over to one of the warriors, who pressed a sword against Murtagh's neck. The bald man clasped his hands together softly.
"Remove your weapons and slide them to me."
A dwarf unbuckled Murtagh's sword and dropped it on the floor with a clank. Loath to be parted with Zarok, Aragorn unfastened the sheath and set it and the blade on the floor. He placed his bow and quiver next to them, then pushed the pile toward the warriors.
"Now step away from your dragon and slowly approach me," commanded the bald man.
Puzzled, Aragorn moved forward. When they were a yard apart, the man said,
"Stop there. Now remove the defenses from around your mind and prepare to let me inspect your thoughts and memories. If you try to hide anything from me, I will take what I want by force, which would drive you mad. If you don't submit, your companion will be killed."
"Why?" asked Aragorn, aghast.
"To be sure you aren't in Galbatorix's service, and to understand why hundreds of Urghuls are banging on our front door," growled the bald man.
His close-set eyes shifted from point to point with cunning speed.
"No one may enter Farthendur without being tested."
"There isn't time. We need a healer," protested Aragorn.
"Silence!"
roared the man, pressing down his robe with thin fingers.
"Until you are examined, your words are meaningless."
"But she's dying," retorted Aragorn angrily, pointing at Arya. They were in a precarious position, but he would let nothing else happen until Arya was cared for.
"It will have to wait. No one will leave this room until we have discovered the truth of this matter. Unless you wish..."
The dwarf who had saved Aragorn from the lake jumped forward.
"Are you blind, Egres Khan? Can't you see that it's an elf on the dragon? We cannot keep her here if she's in danger. Our jihad and the king will have our heads if she's allowed to die."
The man's eyes tightened with anger. After a moment he relaxed and said smoothly,
"Of course, Sorik. We wouldn't want that to happen."
He snapped his fingers and pointed at Arya.
"Remove her from the dragon."
Two human warriors sheathed their swords and hesitantly approached Saphira, who watched them steadily.
"Quickly, quickly!"
The men unstrapped Arya from the saddle and lowered the elf to the floor. One of the men inspected her face, then said sharply,
"It's the dragon egg courier, Arya."
"What?"
exclaimed the bald man. The dwarf Oryk's eyes widened with astonishment. The bald man fixed his steely gaze on Aragorn and said flatly,
"You have much explaining to do."
Aragorn returned the intense stare with all the determination he could muster. "She was poisoned with the Skilna Brach while in prison. Only Tunivor's nectar can save her now." The bald man's face became inscrutable. He stood motionless except for his lips, which twitched occasionally.
"Very well. Take her to the healers and tell them what she needs. Guard her until the ceremony is completed. I will have new orders for you by then."
The warriors nodded curtly and carried Arya out of the room. Aragorn watched them go, wishing that he could accompany her. His attention snapped back to the bald man as he said,
"Enough of this. We have wasted too much time already. Prepare to be examined."
Aragorn did not want this hairless, threatening man inside his mind, laying bare his every thought and feeling, but he knew that resistance would be useless. The air was strained. Murtagh's gaze burned into his forehead. Finally, he bowed his head. "I am ready."
"Good, then..."
He was interrupted, as Auric said abruptly,
"You'd better not harm him, Megrez Khan, else the king will have words for you."
The bald man looked at him irritably, then faced Aragorn with a small smile.
"Only if he resists."
He bowed his head and chanted several inaudible words. Aragorn gasped with pain and shock as a mental probe clawed its way into his mind. His eyes rolled up into his head, and he automatically began throwing up barriers around his consciousness. The attack was incredibly powerful.
"Don't do that!"
cried Saphira. Her thoughts joined his, filling him with strength.
"You're putting Murtagh at risk!"
Aragorn faltered, gritted his teeth, then forced himself to remove his shielding, exposing himself to the ravening probe. Disappointment emanated from the bald man. His battering intensified. The force coming from his mind felt decayed and unwholesome. There was something profoundly wrong about it.
"He wants me to fight him!"
cried Aragorn as a fresh wave of pain racked him. A second later it subsided, only to be replaced by another. Saphira did her best to suppress it, but even she could not block it entirely.
"Give him what he wants,"
she said quickly.
"But protect everything else. I'll help you. His strength is no match for mine. I'm already shielding our words from him."
"Then why does it still hurt?"
"The pain comes from you."
Aragorn winced as the probe dug in further, hunting for information like a nail being driven through his skull. The bald man roughly seized his childhood memories and began sifting through them.
"He doesn't need those. Get him out of there,"
growled Aragorn angrily.
"I can't, not without endangering you," said Saphira. "I can conceal things from his view, but it must be done before he reaches them. Think quickly and tell me what you want hidden."
Aragorn tried to concentrate through the pain. He raced through his memories, starting from when he had found Saphira's egg. He hid sections of his discussions with Brom, including all the ancient words he had been taught. Their travels through the Palancar Valley, Yazwak, Darat and Tirm he left mostly untouched. But he had Saphira conceal everything he remembered of Angela's fortune-telling and Solombum. He skipped from their burglary at Tirm to Brom's death, to his imprisonment at Gilead, and lastly to Murtagh's revelation of his true identity. Aragorn wanted to hide that as well, but Saphira balked.
"The Varden have a right to know who they shelter under their roof, especially if it's a son of the Forsworn."
"Just do it,"
he said tightly, fighting another wave of agony.
"I won't be the one to unmask him, at least not to this man."
"It'll be discovered as soon as Murtagh is scanned,"
warned Saphira sharply.
"Just do it!"
With the most important information hidden, there was nothing else for Aragorn to do but wait for the bald man to finish his inspection. It was like sitting still while his fingernails were extracted with rusty tongs. His entire body was rigid, jaw locked tightly. Heat radiated from his skin and a line of sweat rolled down his neck. He was acutely aware of each second as the long minutes crept by. The bald man wound through his experiences sluggishly, like a thorny vine pushing its way toward the sunlight. He paid keen attention to many things Aragorn considered irrelevant, such as his mother, Selina, and seemed to linger on purpose so as to prolong the suffering. He spent a long time examining Aragorn's recollections of the Razak, and then later the Shade. It was not until his adventures had been exhaustively analyzed that the bald man began to withdraw from Aragorn's mind. The probe was extracted like a splinter being removed. Aragorn shuddered, swayed, then fell toward the floor. Strong arms caught him at the last second, lowering him to the cool marble. He heard Auric exclaim from behind him,
"You went too far. He wasn't strong enough for this."
"He'll live. That's all that is needed,"
answered the bald man curtly. There was an angry grunt.
"What did you find?"
Silence.
"Well, is he to be trusted or not?"
The words came reluctantly.
"He is not your enemy."
There were audible sighs of relief throughout the room. Aragorn's eyes fluttered open. He gingerly pushed himself upright.
"Easy now,"
said Oric, wrapping a thick arm around him and helping him to his feet. Aragorn wove unsteadily, glaring at the bald man. A low growl rumbled in Saphira's throat. The bald man ignored them. He turned to Murtagh, who was still being held at sword point.
"It's your turn now."
Murtagh stiffened and shook his head. The sword cut his neck slightly. Blood dripped down his skin.
"No. You will not be protected here if you refuse."
"Aragorn has been declared trustworthy, so you cannot threaten to kill him to influence me. Since you can't do that, nothing you say or do will convince me to open my mind." Sneering, the bald man cocked what would have been an eyebrow if he had any.
"What of your own life? I can still threaten that."
"It won't do any good," said Murtagh stonily, and with such conviction that it was impossible to doubt his word. The bald man's breath exploded angrily.
"You don't have a choice!"
He stepped forward and placed his palm on Murtagh's brow, clenching his hand to hold him in place. Murtagh stiffened, face growing as hard as iron, fists clenched, neck muscles bulging. He was obviously fighting the attack with all his strength. The bald man bared his teeth with fury and frustration at the resistance. His fingers dug mercilessly into Murtagh. Aragorn winced in sympathy, knowing the battle that raged between them.
"Can't you help him?" he asked Saphira.
"No,"
she said softly.
"He will allow no one into his mind."
Oric scowled darkly as he watched the combatants.
"Ilf counts Orodom,"
he muttered, then leapt forward and cried,
"That is enough!"
He grabbed the bald man's arm and tore him away from Murtagh with strength disproportional to his size. The bald man stumbled back, then turned on Oric furiously.
"How dare you!"
he shouted.
"You questioned my leadership, opened the gates without permission, and now this. You've shown nothing but insolence and treachery. Do you think your king will protect you now?"
Oric bristled.
"You would have let them die. If I had waited any longer, the Urgles would have killed them."
He pointed at Murtagh, whose breath came in great heaves.
"We don't have any right to torture him for information. Al-Jihad won't sanction it. Not after you've examined the rider and found him free of fault. And they brought us Arya."
"Would you allow him to enter unchallenged? Are you so great a fool as to put us all at risk?"
demanded the bald man. His eyes were feral with loosely chained rage. He looked ready to tear the dwarf into pieces.
"Can he use magic?"
"That is..."
"Can he use magic?" roared Oric, his deep voice echoing in the room.
The bald man's face suddenly grew expressionless. He clasped his hands behind his back.
"No."
"Then what do you fear? It's impossible for him to escape, and he can't work any devilry with all of us here, especially if your powers are as great as you say. But don't listen to me. Ask Al-Jihad what he wants done."
The bald man stared at Oric for a moment, his face indecipherable, then looked at the ceiling and closed his eyes. A peculiar stiffness set into his shoulders while his lips moved soundlessly. An intense frown wrinkled the pale skin above his eyes, and his fingers clenched as if they were throttling an invisible enemy. For several minutes he stood thus, wrapped in silent communication. When his eyes opened, he ignored Oric and snapped at the warriors.
"Leave now."
As they filed through the doorway, he addressed Aragorn coldly.
"Because I was unable to complete my examination, you and your friend will remain here for the night. He will be killed if he attempts to leave."
With those words, he turned on his heel and stalked out of the room, pale scalp gleaming in the lantern light.
"Thank you,"
whispered Aragorn to Oric. The dwarf grunted.
"I'll make sure some food is brought."
He muttered a string of words under his breath, then left, shaking his head. The bolt was secured on the outside of the door. Aragorn sat, feeling strangely dreamy from the day's excitement and their forced march. His eyelids were heavy. Saphira settled next to him.
"We must be careful. It seems we have as many enemies here as we did in the Empire."
He nodded, too tired to talk. Murtagh, eyes glazed and empty, leaned against the far wall and slid to the shiny floor. He held his sleeve against the cut on his neck to stop the bleeding. Are you all right? Asked Aragorn. Murtagh nodded jerkily.
Did he get anything from you?
No.
How were you able to keep him out? He's so strong.
I've been well trained. There was a bitter note in his voice. Silence enshrouded them. Aragorn's gaze drifted to one of the lanterns hanging in a corner. His thoughts meandered until he abruptly said, I didn't let them know who you are.
Murtagh looked relieved. He bowed his head.
Thank you for not betraying me.
They didn't recognize you?
No.
And you still say that you are Morzan's son?
Yes, he sighed. Aragorn started to speak, but stopped when he felt hot liquid splash onto his hand. He looked down and was startled to see a drop of dark blood roll off his skin. It had fallen from Saphira's wing.
I forgot, you're injured, he exclaimed, getting up with an effort. I'd better heal you.
Be careful. It's easy to make mistakes when you're this tired.
I know.
Saphira unfolded one of her wings and lowered it to the floor. Murtagh watched as Aragorn ran his hands over the warm blue membrane, saying, We say heal, whenever he found an arrow hole. Luckily, all the wounds were relatively easy to heal, even those on her nose. Task completed, Aragorn slumped against Saphira, breathing hard. He could feel her great heart beating with the steady throb of life.
I hope they bring food soon, said Murtagh.
Aragorn shrugged. He was too exhausted to be hungry. He crossed his arms, missing Zarok's weight by his side.
Why are you here?
What?
If you really are Morzan's son, Galbatorix wouldn't let you wander around Alagazia freely. How is it that you managed to find the Razak by yourself? Why is it I've never heard of any of the Forsworn having children? And what are you doing here?
His voice rose to a near shout at the end. Murtagh ran his hands over his face.
It's a long story.
We're not going anywhere, rebutted Aragorn.
It's too late to talk.
There probably won't be time for it tomorrow. Murtagh wrapped his arms around his legs and rested his chin on his knees, rocking back and forth as he stared at the floor.
It's not a...
he said, then interrupted himself.
I don't want to stop, so make yourself comfortable. My story will take a while.
Aragorn shifted against Saphira's side and nodded. Saphira watched both of them intently. Murtagh's first sentence was halting, but his voice gained strength and confidence as he spoke.
As far as I know, I am the only child of the 13 Servants, or the Forsworn as they're called. There may be others, for the 13 had the skill to hide whatever they wanted, but I doubt it. For reasons I'll explain later. My parents met in a small village I never learned where, while my father was travelling on the king's business. Morzan showed my mother some small kindness, no doubt to ploy to gain her confidence, and when he left, she accompanied him. They travelled together for a time, and, as is the nature of these things, she fell deeply in love with him. Morzan was delighted to discover this, not only because it gave him numerous opportunities to torment her, but also because he recognized the advantage of having a servant who wouldn't betray him. Thus, when Morzan returned to Galbatorix's court, my mother became the tool he relied upon most. He used her to carry his secret messages, and he taught her rudimentary magic which helped her remain undiscovered, and on occasion extract information from people. He did his best to protect her from the rest of the 13, not out of any feelings for her, but because they would have used her against him, given the chance. For 3 years, things proceeded in this manner, until my mother became pregnant. Murtagh paused for a moment, fingering a lock of his hair. He continued in a clipped tone. My father was, if nothing else, a cunning man. He knew that the pregnancy put both him and my mother in danger, not to mention the baby, that is, me. So in the dead of night he spirited her away from the palace and took her to his castle. Once there, he laid down powerful spells that prevented anyone from entering his estate, except for a few chosen servants. In this way, the pregnancy was kept secret from everyone but Galbatorix. Galbatorix knew the intimate details of the 13's lives, their plots, their fights, and most importantly, their thoughts. He enjoyed watching them battle against each other, and often helped one or the other for his own amusement.
but for some reason he never revealed my existence. I was born in due time and given to a wet nurse so my mother could return to Morzan's side. She had no choice in the matter. Morzan allowed her to visit me every few months, but otherwise we were kept apart. Another 3 years passed like this, during which time he gave me the scar on my back. Murtagh brooded a minute before continuing. I would have grown to manhood in this fashion if Morzan hadn't been summoned away to hunt for Saphira's egg. As soon as he departed, my mother, who had been left behind, vanished. No one knows where she went or why. The king tried to hunt her down, but his men couldn't find her trail. No doubt because of Morzan's training. At the time of my birth, only 5 of the 13 were still alive. By the time Morzan left, that number had been reduced to 3. When he finally faced Brom in Gilead, he was the only one remaining. The Forsworn died through various means, suicide, ambush, overuse of magic, but it was mostly the work of the Varden. I'm told that the king was in a terrible rage because of those losses. However, before word of Morzan's and the others' deaths reached us, my mother returned. Many months had passed since she had disappeared. Her health was poor, as if she had suffered a great illness, and she grew steadily worse. Within a fortnight, she died.
What happened then? Prompted Aragorn.
Murtagh shrugged. I grew up. The king brought me to the palace and arranged for my upbringing. Aside from that, he left me alone.
Then why did you leave?
A hard laugh broke from Murtagh. Escaped is more like it. At my last birthday, when I turned 18, the king summoned me to his quarters for a private dinner. The message surprised me because I'd always distanced myself from the court and had rarely met him. We'd talked before, but always within earshot of eavesdropping nobles. I accepted the offer, of course, aware that it would be unwise to refuse. The meal was sumptuous, but throughout it his black eyes never left me. His gaze was disconcerting. It seemed that he was searching for something hidden in my face. I didn't know what to make of it and did my best to provide polite conversation, but he refused to talk, and I soon ceased my efforts. When the meal was finished, he finally began to speak. You've never heard his voice, so it's hard for me to make you understand what it was like. His words were entrancing, like a snake whispering gilded lies into my ears. A more convincing and frightening man I've never heard. He wove a vision, a fantasy of the Empire as he imagined it. There would be beautiful cities built across the country, filled with the greatest warriors, artisans, musicians, and philosophers. The Urgals would finally be eradicated, and the Empire would expand in every direction until it reached the four corners of Alagazia. Peace and prosperity would flourish, but more wondrous yet. The Riders would be brought back to gently govern over Galbatorix's fiefdoms. Entranced, I listened to him from what must have been hours. When he stopped, I eagerly asked how the Riders would be reinstated, for everyone knew there were no dragon eggs left. Galbatorix grew still then and stared at me thoughtfully. For a long time he was silent, but then he extended his hand and asked, "Will you, O son of my friend, serve me as I labour to bring about this paradise?" Though I knew the history behind his and my father's rise to power, the dream he had painted for me was too compelling, too seductive to ignore. Ardour for this mission filled me, and I fervently pledged myself to him. Obviously pleased, Galbatorix gave me his blessing, then dismissed me, saying, "I shall call upon you when the need arises." Several months passed before he did. When the summons came, I felt all of my old excitement return. We met in private as before, but this time he was not pleasant or charming. The Varden had just destroyed 3 brigades in the south, and his wrath was out in full force. He charged me in a terrible voice to take a detachment of troops and destroy Kantos, where rebels were known to hide occasionally. When I asked what we should do with the people there and how we would know if they were guilty, he shouted, "They're all traitors, burn them at the stake and bury their ashes with dung." He continued to rant, cursing his enemies and describing how he would scourge the land of everyone who bore him ill will. His tone was so different from what I had encountered before, it made me realize he didn't possess the mercy or foresight to gain the people's loyalty, and he ruled only through brute force guided by his own passions. It was at that moment I determined to escape him and Urubane forever.
As soon as I was free of his presence, I and my faithful servant Tornak made ready for flight. We left that very night, but somehow Galbatorix anticipated my actions, for there were soldiers waiting for us outside the gates. Ah, my sword was bloody, flashing in the dim lantern glow. We defeated the men, but in the process Tornak was killed. Alone and filled with grief, I fled to an old friend who sheltered me in his estate. While I hid, I listened carefully to every rumor, trying to predict Galbatorix's actions and plan my future. During that time, talk reached me that the Razak had been sent to capture or kill someone. Remembering the king's plans for the riders, I decided to find and follow the Razak, just in case they did discover a dragon. And that's how I found you. I have no more secrets.
We still don't know if he's telling the truth,
warned Saphira.
I know, said Aragorn. But why would he lie to us?
He might be mad.
I doubt it.
Aragorn ran a finger over Saphira's hard scales, watching the light reflect off them.
So why don't you join the Varden? They'll distrust you for a time, but once you prove your loyalty, they'll treat you with respect. And aren't they, in a sense, your allies? They strive to end the king's reign. Isn't that what you want?
Must I spell everything out for you? Demanded Murtagh.
I don't want Galbatorix to learn where I am, which is inevitable if people start saying that I've sided with his enemies, which I've never done.
These, he paused, then said with distaste, rebels are not trying to only overthrow the king, but to destroy the empire, and I don't want that to happen. It would sow mayhem and anarchy. The king is flawed, yes, but the system itself is sound.
As for earning the Varden's respect, once I'm exposed they'll treat me like a criminal or worse. Not only that, suspicion will fall upon you because we travel together.
He's right, said Saphira.
Aragorn ignored her.
It isn't that bad, he said, trying to sound optimistic.
Murtagh snorted derisively and looked away.
I'm sure that they won't be...
His words were cut short as the door opened a hand's breadth and two bowls were pushed through the space. A loaf of bread and a hunk of raw meat followed, then the door was shut again.
Finally, grumbled Murtagh, going to the food.
He tossed the meat to Saphira, who snapped it out of the air and swallowed it whole. Then he tore the loaf in two, gave half to Aragorn, picked up his bowl, and retreated to a corner. They ate silently. Murtagh jabbed at his food.
I'm going to sleep, he announced, putting down his bowl without another word.
Good night, said Aragorn. He lay next to Saphira, his arms under his head. She curled her long neck around him like a cat wrapping its tail around itself and laid her head alongside his. One of her wings extended over him like a blue tent, enveloping him in darkness.
Good night, little one.
A small smile lifted Aragorn's lips, but he was already asleep.
The Glory of Trondheim.
Aragorn jolted upright as a growl sounded in his ear. Saphira was still asleep, her eyes wandering sightlessly under her eyelids, and her upper lip trembled, as if she were going to snarl. He smiled, then jerked as she growled again.
She must be dreaming, he realized.
He watched her for a minute, then carefully slid out from under her wing. He stood and stretched. The room was cool, but not unpleasantly so. Murtagh lay on his back in the far corner, his eyes closed. As Aragorn stepped around Saphira, Murtagh stirred.
Morning, he said quietly, sitting up.
How long have you been awake? Asked Aragorn in a hushed voice.
A while. I'm surprised Saphira didn't wake you sooner.
I was tired enough to sleep through a thunderstorm, said Aragorn wryly. He sat by Murtagh and rested his head against the wall.
Do you know what time it is?
No. It's impossible to tell in here.
Has anyone come to see us?
Not yet. They sat together without moving or speaking. Aragorn felt oddly bound to Murtagh.
I've been carrying his father's sword, which would have been his inheritance. We're alike in many ways, yet our outlook and upbringing are totally different.
He thought of Murtagh's scar and shivered.
What man could do that to a child?
Saphira lifted her head,
and blinked to clear her eyes. She sniffed the air, then yawned expansively, her rough tongue curling at the tip.
"Has anything happened?"
Aragorn shook his head.
"I hope they give me more food than that snack last night. I'm hungry enough to eat a herd of cows."
"They'll feed you," he assured her.
"They'd better."
She positioned herself near the door and settled down to wait, tail flicking. Aragorn closed his eyes, enjoying the rest. He dozed a while, then got up and paced around. Bored, he examined one of the lanterns. It was made of a single piece of teardrop-shaped glass, about twice the size of a lemon, and filled with soft blue light that neither wavered nor flickered. Four slim metal ribs wrapped smoothly around the glass, meeting at the top to form a small hook, and again at the bottom where they melded together into three graceful legs. The whole piece was quite attractive. Aragorn's inspection was interrupted by voices outside the room. The door opened and a dozen warriors marched inside. The first man gulped when he saw Saphira. They were followed by Oric and the bald man, who declared,
"You have been summoned to Arjahad, leader of the Varden. If you must eat, do so while we march."
Aragorn and Murtagh stood together, watching him warily. "Where are our horses, and can I have my sword and bow back?" asked Aragorn. The bald man looked at him with disdain.
"Your weapons will be returned to you when Arjahad sees fit, not before. As for your horses, they await you in the tunnel. Now come."
As he turned to leave, Aragorn asked quickly, "How is Arya?" The bald man hesitated.
"I do not know. The healers are still with her."
He exited the room, accompanied by Oric. One of the warriors motioned, "You go first." Aragorn went through the doorway, followed by Saphira and Murtagh. They returned through the corridor they had traversed the night before, passing the statue of the quilled animal. When they reached the huge tunnel through which they had first entered the mountain, the bald man was waiting with Oric, who held Tornax and Snowfire's reins.
"You will ride single file down the center of the tunnel," instructed the bald man. "If you attempt to go anywhere else, you will be stopped."
When Aragorn started to climb onto Saphira, the bald man shouted,
"No! Ride your horse until I tell you otherwise."
Aragorn shrugged and took Snowfire's reins. He swung into the saddle, guided Snowfire in front of Saphira, and told her,
"Stay close in case I need your help."
"Of course," she said.
Murtagh mounted Tornak behind Saphira. The bald man examined their small line, then gestured at the warriors, who divided in half to surround them, giving Saphira as wide a berth as possible. Oric and the bald man went to the head of the procession. After looking them over once more, the bald man clapped twice and started walking forward. Aragorn tapped Snowfire lightly on his flanks. The entire group headed toward the heart of the mountain. Echoes filled the tunnel as the horses' hooves struck the hard floor, the sounds amplified in the deserted passageway. Doors and gates occasionally disturbed the smooth walls, but they were always closed. Aragorn marveled at the sheer size of the tunnel, which had been mined with incredible skill. The walls, floor, and ceiling were crafted with flawless precision. The angles at the bases of the walls were perfectly square, and as far as he could tell, the tunnel itself did not vary from its course by even an inch. As they proceeded, Aragorn's anticipation about meeting Arjahad increased. The leader of the Varden was a shadowy figure to the people within the Empire. He had risen to power nearly 20 years ago, and since then had waged a fierce war against King Galbatorix. No one knew where he came from, or even what he looked like. It was rumored that he was a master strategist, a brutal fighter. With such a reputation, Aragorn worried about how they would be received. Still, knowing that Brom had trusted the Varden enough to serve them helped to allay his fears. Seeing Oric again had brought forth new questions in his mind. The tunnel was obviously dwarf work. No one else could mine with such skill. But were the dwarves part of the Varden, or were they merely sheltering them? And who was the king that Oric had mentioned? Was it Arjahad? Aragorn understood now that the Varden had been able to escape discovery by hiding underground, but what about the elves? Where were they? For nearly an hour, the bald man led them through the tunnel, never straying nor turning.
"We've probably already gone a league," Aragorn realized. "Maybe they're taking us all the way through the mountain."
At last, a soft white glow became visible ahead of them. He strained his eyes, trying to discern its source, but it was still too far away to make out any details. The glow increased in strength as they neared it. Now he could see thick marble pillars laced with rubies and amethysts, standing in rows along the walls. Scores of lanterns hung between the pillars, suffusing the air with liquid brilliance. Gold tracery gleamed from the pillars' bases like molten thread. Arching over the ceiling were carved raven heads, their beaks open in mid-screech. At the end of the hallway rested two colossal black doors accented by shimmering silver lines that depicted a seven-pointed crown that spanned both sides. The bald man stopped and raised a hand. He turned to Aragorn.
"You will ride upon your dragon now. Do not attempt to fly away. There will be people watching, so remember who and what you are."
Aragorn dismounted Snowfire and then clambered onto Saphira's back.
"I think they want to show us off,"
she said as he settled into the saddle.
"We'll see. I wish I had Zarok,"
he replied, tightening the straps around his legs.
"It might be better that you aren't wearing Morzan's sword when the Varden first see you."
"True."
"I'm ready," Aragorn said, squaring his shoulders.
"Good,"
said the bald man. He and Auric retreated to either side of Saphira, staying far enough back so she was clearly in the lead.
"Now walk to the doors, and once they open, follow the path. Go slowly."
"Ready?" asked Aragorn.
"Of course."
Saphira approached the doors at a measured pace. Her scales sparkled in the light, sending glints of color dancing over the pillars. Aragorn took a deep breath to steady his nerves. Without warning, the doors swung outward on hidden joints. As the rift widened between them, rays of sunlight streamed into the tunnel, falling on Saphira and Aragorn. Temporarily blinded, Aragorn blinked and squinted. When his eyes adjusted to the light, he gasped. They were inside a massive, volcanic crater. Its walls narrowed to a small, ragged opening so high above that Aragorn could not judge the distance. It might have been more than a dozen miles. A soft beam of light fell through the aperture, illuminating the crater's center, though it left the rest of the cavernous expanse in hushed twilight. The crater's far side, hazy blue in the distance, looked to be nearly 10 miles away. Giant icicles, hundreds of feet thick and thousands of feet long, hung leagues above them like glistening daggers. Aragorn knew from his experience in the valley that no one, not even Saphira, could reach those lofty points. Farther down the crater's inner walls, dark mats of moss and lichen covered the rock. He lowered his gaze and saw a wide cobblestone path extending from the door's threshold. The path ran straight to the center of the crater, where it ended at the base of a snowy white mountain that glittered like an uncut gem with thousands of colored lights. It was less than a tenth of the height of the crater that loomed over and around it, but its diminutive appearance was deceiving, for it was slightly higher than a mile. Long as it was, the tunnel had only taken them through one side of the crater wall. As Aragorn stared, he heard Auric say deeply,
"Look well, human, for no rider has set eyes upon this for nigh over 100 years. The airy peak under which we stand is Farthan Dûr, discovered thousands of years ago by the father of our race, Corgan, while he tunnelled for gold. And in the center stands our greatest achievement, Trondheim, the city mountain built from the purest marble."
The doors grated to a halt.
"A city?"
Then Aragorn saw the crowd. He had been so engrossed by the sights that he had failed to notice a dense sea of people clustered around the tunnel's entrance. They lined the cobblestone pathway, dwarves and humans packed together like trees in a thicket. There were hundreds, thousands of them. Every eye, every face was focused on Aragorn, and every one of them was silent. Aragorn gripped the base of one of Saphira's neck spikes. He saw children in dirty smocks, hardy men with scarred knuckles, women in homespun dresses, and stout, weathered dwarves who fingered their beards. All of them bore the same taut expression, that of an injured animal when a predator is nearby and escape is impossible. A bead of sweat rolled down Aragorn's face, but he dared not move to wipe it away.
"What should I do?"
he asked frantically.
Smile, raise your hand, anything, replied Saphira sharply.
Aragorn tried to force out a smile, but his lips only twitched. Gathering his courage, he pushed his hand into the air, jerking it in a little wave. When nothing happened, he flushed with embarrassment, lowered his arm, and ducked his head. A single cheer broke the silence. Someone clapped loudly. For a brief second, the crowd hesitated. Then a wild roar swept through it, and a wave of sound crashed over Aragorn.
Very good, said the bald man from behind him. Now start walking.
Relieved, Aragorn sat straighter and playfully asked Saphira, Shall we go? She arched her neck and stepped forward. As they passed the first row of people, she glanced to each side and exhaled a puff of smoke. The crowd quieted and shrank back, then resumed cheering, their enthusiasm only intensified.
Show off, chided Aragorn.
Saphira flicked her tail and ignored him. He stared curiously at the jostling crowd as she proceeded along the path. Dwarves greatly outnumbered humans, and many of them glared at him resentfully. Some even turned their backs and walked away with stony faces. The humans were hard, tough people. All the men had daggers or knives at their waists. Many were armed for war. The women carried themselves proudly, but they seemed to conceal a deep, abiding weariness. The few children and babies stared at Aragorn with large eyes. He felt certain that these people had experienced much hardship and that they would do whatever necessary to defend themselves. The Varden had found the perfect hiding place. Farthendur's walls were too high for a dragon to fly over, and no army could break through the entranceway, even if it managed to find the hidden doors. The crowd followed close behind them, giving Saphira plenty of room. Gradually the people quieted, though their attention remained on Aragorn. He looked back and saw Murtagh riding stiffly, his face pale. They neared the city mountain, and Aragorn saw that the white marble of Trondheim was highly polished and shaped into flowing contours as if it had been poured into place. It was dotted with countless round windows framed by elaborate carvings. A coloured lantern hung in each window, casting a soft glow on the surrounding rock. No turrets or smokestacks were visible. Directly ahead, 2 30-foot-high gold griffins guarded a massive timber gate recessed 20 yards into the base of Trondheim, which was shadowed by thick trusses that supported an arched vault far overhead. When they reached Trondheim's base, Saphira paused to see if the bald man had any instructions. When none were forthcoming, she continued to the gate. The walls were lined with fluted pillars of blood-red jasper. Between the pillars hulked statues of outlandish creatures captured forever by the sculptor's chisel. The heavy gate rumbled open before them as hidden chains slowly raised the mammoth beams. A 4-story-high passageway extended straight toward the center of Trondheim. The top 3 levels were pierced by rows of archways that revealed grey tunnels curving off into the distance. Clumps of people filled the arches, eagerly watching Aragorn and Saphira. On ground level, however, the archways were barred by stout doors. Rich tapestries hung between the different levels, embroidered with heroic figures and tumultuous battle scenes. A cheer rang in their ears as Saphira stepped into the hall and paraded down it. Aragorn raised his hand, eliciting another roar from the throng, though many of the dwarves did not join the welcoming shout. The mile-long hall ended in an arch flanked by black onyx pillars. Yellow zircons, 3 times the size of a man, capped the dark columns, coruscating piercing gold beams along the hall. Saphira stepped through the opening, then stopped and craned back her neck, humming deeply in her chest. They were in a circular room, perhaps 1,000 feet across, that reached up to Trondheim's peak 1 mile overhead, narrowing as it rose. The walls were lined with arches, 1 row for each level of the city mountain, and the floor was made of polished carnelian, upon which was etched a hammer girdled by 12 silver pentacles, like on Oryx's helm. The room was a nexus for 4 hallways, including the one they had just exited, that divided Trondheim into quarters. The halls were identical except for the one opposite Aragorn. To the right and left of that hall were tall arches that opened to descending stairs, which mirrored each other as they curved underground. The ceiling was capped by a dawn-red star sapphire of monstrous size. The jewel was 20 yards across and nearly as thick.
Its face had been carved to resemble a rose in full bloom, and so skilled was the craftsmanship the flower almost seemed to be real. A wide belt of lanterns wrapped around the edge of the sapphire, which cast striated bands of blushing